Hare Krishna. So, did everybody get the summary of the first six chapters?
Yes.
Rati, you got that? You didn't have one. Anyway, you'll get a copy. So today, I will cover all the six chapters in one go. Are you all ready for that?
Yes.
With rapt attention?
Yes.
Very good. What is Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavad Gita is the essence of the Vedas. The Vedas are vast. Therefore, Vyasadeva considered that the essence of, or Krishna actually considered, that the essence of the Vedas should be given, presented, for the age of, for the conditioned souls, for the fallen, degraded souls of the age of Kali. And that's why he presented that in the Mahabharata, in the form of advising Arjuna at a very critical time, when Arjuna was, when the battle of Kurukshetra was about to begin. And at that time, Arjuna decided not to fight. He dropped his bow and arrows, and he told Krishna, "Krishna, I cannot fight this battle." And at that time, Krishna started to advise Arjuna, and that advice that Krishna gave is the Bhagavad Gita. Why Krishna wanted Arjuna to fight? There are two reasons. One is, this battle was actually Krishna's arrangement. This battle was Krishna's arrangement. You remember that verse? Yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata. Then what does Krishna do? Paritranaya sadhuna and vinashaya cha dushkrita. I'll hold it for you. He protects the sadhus, Krishna protects the devotees, and he annihilates the demons. Therefore, Krishna made that arrangement. During his Vrindavan pastimes, he killed all the demons. Then he left Vrindavan, went to Mathura, killed Kamsa. And then he killed many, many demons, one after another, and he made many other demons to be killed by his devotees like Bhima and Arjuna. And then finally this battle was arranged where all the demons were kept put in one side and devotees on the other side. And he caused a mass annihilation in order to re-establish karma. So, now all this battle was arranged, and now Arjuna says that he's not going to fight. So that's why Krishna wanted to provoke Arjuna. Another reason is that all the endeavors was made by so many devotees to stop the battle. So many learned, wise individuals advised them. Vyasadeva personally came to advise Arjuna, Duryodhana. Bhishma told, Vidura told, Gandhari told, but Duryodhana was adamant. Finally, Krishna himself went as a messenger to with a peace proposal. But Duryodhan wanted to speak of not listening to him. He decided to arrest Krishna. He thought that if Krishna is not there with the Pandavas, then the Pandavas will become absolutely weak. And to win over them would be an easy task. So he thought that he would arrest Krishna. And at that time Krishna showed his universal form. And so all the efforts had already been made, and Duryodhana was adamant, completely adamant to fight the battle. And now when the battle is all set, after all this effort of peace proposals, then Arjun says that he's going to fight. So Krishna started to advise Arjun about Bhagavad Gita. And the objective of Bhagavad Gita was the apparent objective of Bhagavad Gita was to provoke Arjun into the battle. But the ulterior purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to give it to us so that we can receive this knowledge. That has been very wonderfully described in the Gita Mahatmya. Sarva Upanishado Gabo Dogdha Gopala Nandana Vatsa Partha Sudhir Bhokta Dugdham Gitam Vitam Bharat. Sarva Upanishado Gabo. All the Upanishads are like a cow. And Krishna is the cowherd boy who milked the cow, making Arjun the object of that milking. The cow gives milk for the sake of the calf. Because of the calf, the cow gives the milk. But the calf doesn't drink all the milk. Who drinks the milk? Human beings drink milk. So here, Arjun is the nimittya. Arjun is the objective through whom the milk, the Gita has been presented. But who drinks this Bhagavad Gita, the nectar of Bhagavad Gita? Sudhi. Sudhi. Those who have very advanced intelligence. Those who have very beautiful intelligence. This word su can indicate sundar one way, which is beautiful intelligence. Another is advanced intelligence. So people with advanced intelligence can relish Bhagavad Gita. So that is the purpose of Bhagavad Gita, and in this way, Krishna actually derived the essence of the Vedas. Vedas have two branches. One branch is Upanishad, and the other branch is Puran. So the essence of Upanishad is Bhagavad Gita, and essence of all the Puranas is Srimad Bhagavatam. That's why these two scriptures are absolutely essential. If anybody wants to understand the wisdom of the Vedas, the teachings of the Vedas, then these are the two scriptures that are absolutely essential. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established his teachings through this Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. All our acharyas have done that. And finally, Srila Prabhupada also established the Krishna consciousness movement on the basis of these two scriptures. You see the importance of these two scriptures. In the morning, we study Srimad Bhagavatam, and in the evening, we study Bhagavad Gita. So in this way, Prabhupada established the importance of these two scriptures. So Bhagavad Gita is Very, very important. Bhagavad Gita is, again, it is a preliminary study. You begin your spiritual studies with Bhagavad Gita, and then the advanced course is Srimad Bhagavatam. And the postgraduate course is Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, in the first chapter, it has been described how Arjuna decided not to fight, but Krishna insisted that he must. He convinced him. Actually, in the beginning, Arjuna is actually telling Krishna that he is not going to fight. Then, in the second chapter, from the second chapter onwards, Krishna's instruction begins. So Krishna let Arjuna speak. And after all this,
I know you are trying to make me comfortable, but it's a
I'm better off this way. So, second chapter of Bhagavad Gita is known as the Sankhya Yoga. But Srila Prabhupada actually titled it as the summary, the Bhagavad Gita summarized. The second chapter again is giving the summary of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, Sankhya is the analytical study. Analytical study. You analyze. Now, we see that's what Krishna is doing. Krishna is telling Arjuna the difference between the body and the soul. Arjuna gave various reasons why he won't be able to fight this battle. Why he should not fight this battle. And it is actually a very, very difficult battle to fight. As it is, battle is a serious business. When a warrior, when a kshatriya goes into a battlefield, he goes there only with two options open to him. Either he will win the battle, or he will die. He goes to the battlefield, of course, with an intention to win, but at the same time, he knows, and his family members know. When somebody goes to a battle, the chances of his coming back is also there. Chances of his not coming back is also there. So the kshatriya, apparently it seems, they're enjoying so much, they're living a royal life, and so much enjoyment, and so much fun. But actually the kshatriya lives are very, very critical and crucial. Like, can you imagine, the young man goes to the battlefield, and not only the king, all his soldiers, and many of them die, and sometimes the king himself dies, and all of a sudden the whole family lost everything. They lost the kingdom because they have been defeated by the enemy. And they would... It's actually very, very painful. That's what has been pointed out in Bhagavad Gita. The mode of passion... What does mode of passion lead to? Mode of passion actually leads to suffering. The effort is there, the endeavor is there to enjoy, but eventually it ends up in suffering. Mode of passion leads to suffering. It's only in the mode of goodness that one can be situated in happiness. The real happiness is in the mode of goodness. And the spiritual bliss is even beyond the mode of goodness. In the mode of pure goodness. Vishuddha. Therefore, an intelligent person would become situated in the mode of goodness and then transcend the mode of goodness and come to the spiritual goodness or pure goodness. So Arjun is there in the battlefield and he says that he cannot kill his guru, his grandfather. He's telling Krishna, how can I kill my grandfather? How can I shoot arrows? Katham bhishmam aham sankhe dronam cha madhusudana ishubhi pratiyat swami. Ishubhi means with arrows. Pratiyat swami means contest. Not only that I'll shoot arrows at them, they'll also shoot arrows to me. It's a very difficult situation. So he says, I'm not going to fight this battle. Then Krishna heard silently. Then finally when Arjun says that, Krishna, I do not know what to do. I am completely confused. Now you please tell me what I should do. I am assuming the role of your disciple. I am becoming a disciple, which means I am accepting you as my spiritual master. So when Arjun submitted himself to Krishna, then only Krishna started to advise him. So here also we learn one lesson. Unless and until we surrender to Krishna, Krishna is not going to take our responsibility. Sometimes people say, why Krishna is doing this to me? Why Krishna is not doing that to me? But the point is, are you surrendering yourself to Krishna? If you surrender yourself to Krishna, yes, Krishna will take your responsibility. There is no doubt about that. Krishna himself is giving that assurance. So you surrender and Krishna will take control. So when Arjun surrendered himself to Krishna accepted him as a spiritual master, then Krishna started to advise him. And those advice are so wonderful. And that is what constitutes Bhagavad Gita. When Krishna started to speak, the first thing Krishna told Arjun, you're speaking like a wise man, but you don't know anything. Ashochan anushochastha. You are lamenting over things that one should lament for. And yet, praggavadanscha bhashashi. You are speaking like a wise man. So he just smashed him straight away. And then he started to give him that advice. That Arjun, you are lamenting that you will kill your grandfather, you will kill this king and your friends and your relatives. But there was never a time when they were not here. And there will never be a time when they will not be here. There was never a time when you, I and all these kings were not here. And there will never be a time when they will not be here. Now who is that? That will always be there. Who has been in the past, he is present at the moment, and who will continue to be there in future. Who is that?
The soul.
And then Krishna made that point also very clear. The difference between the body and the soul. That's why Bhagavad Gita is actually very, very scientific. Bhagavad Gita is a science. It's the science of the spiritual reality. We have different sciences. Science of physics, science of chemistry, science of mathematics. There are so many different sciences. But this is the science. Those are the science of material subject matter. But this is the science of the spiritual reality. The science of the soul. And that science of the soul will lead to the spiritual nature. And eventually it will lead to the Supreme Personality of God. If you study this subject properly. And then Krishna actually makes this point in a very simple way. It's so simple yet so profound. Just see, the body and the soul. Krishna is establishing this, the two different elements. He's saying that the body changes from childhood to boyhood to youth to old age. The body changes, but the person doesn't change. So in spite of the change of the body, you are not changing. None of us are changing. Our body is changing, but we are the same person. At 5 year old, at the age of 5, I at the age of 15, I at the age of 25, and I at the age of 64, am the same person. Although my body changed. And so Krishna is making a conclusion that in spite of the change of the body, the person doesn't change. So when the body will not be there, still the person will be there. In this way, he is establishing the eternity of the soul. Dehi nashmin yatha dehe komaram jovanam jara tatha dehantara prapti. Tatha. Just as the body changes, but in spite of the change of the body, the person doesn't change. So when the person will leave the body, he will take up another body. Dehantara prapti. And dhiras tatra namujati. A person situated in knowledge doesn't lament over that. Change of the body. And then he establishes the characteristics of the soul. Na jayate mriyate va kadachi. The soul is never born, nor the soul will ever die. And this soul cannot be destroyed by anything. The body can be killed, but the soul cannot be killed. The body can be killed by weapon, the body can be killed by fire, body can be drowned in water. And in this way, the body can be killed in so many different ways. Nainam chinnanti shastrani, nainam dahuti bhavaka. The soul cannot be cut by any weapon, the soul cannot be burnt by fire, the soul cannot be drowned in water, soul cannot be dried by the air. Avinashi tutat vidhi yena sarvaminam tata. So therefore, you recognize that the soul is indestructible. The soul is indestructible. Soul is eternal, first he established, then he established that the soul is indestructible. And in this way, Krishna dealt with the initial aspect of the differentiating soul from the body. Unfortunately, in the material nature, we identify ourselves with the body. And that is the cause of our suffering, cause of our distress. Because we are identifying ourselves with the body, we are so frustrated. Frustrated why? Because we are actually hankering our hankerings are spiritual. Our hankerings are from the soul. We are conscious being, we are desiring, now there is another thing, consideration. The characteristics of the soul. The characteristics of the soul is consciousness. Characteristics of the soul is to desire. And when the desire is fulfilled, there is happiness. Now, the problem is that our desires are spiritual and we are trying to achieve those desires, fulfill those desires through this material body. So that's why our desires are never fulfilled. And we are always ending up in disappointment and frustration. And that is the cause of our suffering. The soul is eternal. We don't want to die. Because we are eternal by nature, we want to be eternal. But we are trying to attain that immortality or eternity through the body. We are trying to make this body eternal, which will never happen. We are trying to make this body fully conscious, which will never happen. And we are trying to experience joy through this body, which will never happen. That's why we are, our life is a series of disappointment and frustrations. So in this way, Krishna is actually preparing us with the right form of understanding. So eventually Krishna comes to the point, that what is the characteristic of a wise man? Arjuna is asking, what's the characteristic of a wise man? Sthitapragya, a person who is situated in perfect knowledge. And Krishna describes the nature of a sthitapragya. And here, since we are discussing about Shankha philosophy, like we can go into the Sankha branch of philosophy. Briefly, I'll discuss about that. Sankha is the analytical study. The analytical study, actually, ultimately, the purpose of this analytical study is to make it analyze the material nature and eventually come to the spiritual understanding. Now, the Sankha philosophy is doing that. Sankha philosophy basically is dealing with first analyzing the material nature, material element. There are five elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether. Then there are five senses. We have five senses: eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and touch. Now our senses interact with the elements, the five elements. And as a result of that, five objects of the senses are generated. So, so five objects of the senses are generated. Like eyes interact with fire, form is produced. Ear interacts with ether, sound is produced. Air interacts with skin, touch is produced. Water interacts with tongue, taste is produced. And earth interacts with nose, or rather nose interacts with earth. And smell is produced. So in this way, five objects of the senses are produced. So how many got? Three fives are? 15. Then there are five working senses. Hands, legs, anus, belly and genitals. So 20. Then there are three subtle elements. Mind, intelligence, false ego. And then there is a sum total of material elements, Mahatattva, 24. In this 24 consideration, the entire material nature has been analyzed. Now see how thoughtful, how profound, how penetrating they are. They consider that all these 24 considerations are objective in nature. But the object cannot exist without the subject. So who is the subject? The subject is I. Now the entire material nature has been analyzed with this 24 consideration. I couldn't be found there. Therefore I is beyond material. So in this way, Sankha is transcending the material platform and coming to the spiritual platform. The I is non-material, therefore I is spiritual. Then also, they didn't stop at that. The eyes are many and minute. So anything that is many and minute must have an origin, must have a source. So I is the 25th consideration, and the supreme personality of Godhead from whom all the eyes have come, or all the souls have come, is the 26th consideration. Now that is the general Sankha philosophy. But Krishna is making an analysis in a rather different way, in a more simple way. Krishna is doing, is just in one verse, just in two verses actually. Bhumir apo anulo vayu hum mano buddhi revacha. Bhumi, earth, water, fire, air, ether. mind, intelligence and false ego. I think somebody has to take care of the children here. So, earth, water, fire, these eight, Krishna then is pointing out this material nature has been comprised of these eight material elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego. But then he is considering that aparaya mitaskanna, this is inferior by nature. But beyond this inferior material nature, there is a superior nature of mind. And the jiva bhutan, the spirit souls are coming from the superior nature. And they are sustaining this material nature. Isn't it the same conclusion? But Krishna's conclusion is so simple. Why? Because Krishna is not beating around the bush. He is simply going straight to the point. Why? Because he knows. When you do not know, then we make an extraneous and extensive search. And then through that we come to the conclusion. But when somebody knows, he can present it in a very simple way. Therefore, the wise man's presentation is simple. And a fool's presentation is elaborate. So Krishna is just pointing it out in a very simple way. Bhinna prakriti rashtatha. And then aparaya mitastanna prakriti bhitti nipara. That beyond this inferior material nature, there is a superior nature. Now the consideration is whether we are going to believe in the words of Krishna. Krishna is saying, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is the use, what's the need for Krishna to lie? What's the use of Krishna to say something which is not true? That's why an intelligent person will accept the words of Krishna without any doubt or hesitation. And that is what Krishna's representative always try to remind us. Accept the words of Krishna. That's what Srila Prabhupada came and told us time and time again. Just accept the words of Krishna. Then everything becomes crystal clear. Everything becomes easy and our life becomes full of joy. All we have to do is simply accept it. In the third chapter, Krishna is actually presenting that the arrangement of this material nature. This material nature has different demigods controlling the different affairs of this material nature. Different demigods are controlling different affairs of the material nature. Who are the demigods? They are very powerful individuals. Very powerful individuals. They are empowered by Krishna to take care of different affairs of the material nature. An example can be given just as in the governmental affairs, there are different departments. And there are different individuals who are in charge, responsible for those departments. Like we have electric supply department, then water supply department, and education department, finance department, public works department, construction department, road department, atomic research department. And on top there is a person who is the in charge of those departments. And what are those departments doing? Those departments actually provide us with different facilities. They provide us with facilities. Like we are sitting in the room, we're getting the electric supply. And as a result of that, what we have to do? We are getting the electricity, we are enjoying the facility, but we have to pay the bills. We have to pay for the facilities that we are enjoying. Now the demigods are the departmental heads. And Krishna is telling that they are going to supply you with all those necessities of your life. And you pay them in return. And that is the system of sacrifice, yajna. Saha yajna praja srishta puravacha prajapati. So, this way, this arrangement has been made, the arrangement for yajna. And which means simply, you enjoy the facility and pay the bill. And if you do that, then what will happen? You will enjoy. You will lead a very, very nice and happy life. But if you don't pay them, then what will happen? You are enjoying the electricity. For 1 month you have enjoyed it. And then the bill came. And you decided not to pay the bill. What will happen? The next month there won't be any electricity. They'll cut it off. They'll cut the electric supply. So similarly, in the broader sense, in the nature, we are getting all these facilities that they are being provided by the demigods. And we are supposed to offer the sacrifice. We are supposed to pay the bill in the form of sacrifice. They are giving us, they don't want anything else. All they want is just some sacrifice. It costs very little. You are getting so much and you are paying so little. So why not? So why Krishna is advising us to do that? Because this is how the law and order of this nature will be maintained. It's like a large and extensive government system, affairs of material nature. And Krishna advised that in this way how one can live so happily. And eventually Krishna is actually saying that what is your need? An example is being given. You need food. You need food. That's the most essential element or ingredient for our survival. Food. And the food is produced because of rain. Annat bhavanti bhutani. Living entities survive by eating food. Parjannad anna sambhava. The food grains are produced due to rain. And yajna bhavati parjanya. And it is because of yajna, sacrifice, that rain actually comes. And yajna karma samut bhavana. In this way, the process of sacrifice has been established by Krishna. And in this way, Krishna gave an extensive understanding of how to live happily in this nature. The supplier and consumer. A proper relationship must be established. And this relationship comes down ultimately in the form of the kings. Demigods are supplying. Now who will train the people? Who will make all these arrangements? The leader of the mankind. The kings. Unfortunately, in democracy, there is no king. And therefore, all kinds of low-class people are taking up the leadership position. But actually, the kings are the highest class of people. They're Rajarshis. The saintly personalities who used to become the king, and they used to be trained up from their childhood to execute this job properly. They used to be properly trained and then they used to assume the responsibility. But in the name of democracy, what is happening? People, those who don't have any training, all they know is how to bluff, how to swindle, how to cheat and get votes. And when they get votes, they become leader. And that also only for 5 years or 4 years. And they know that whatever they have to make, they have to make in this 4 years' time. And as a result of that, the human society is in such a terrible condition. But Krishna actually pointed out that this knowledge and this system was established by the royal order. So after giving this knowledge, Krishna, in the fourth chapter, the beginning of the fourth chapter, Krishna is telling that I gave this knowledge to Sangam Vivashva. Imam Vivashati Yogam Praptavan Aham Ambayam. And Vivashvan Manave Praha. Vivashvan gave it to Manu. Sun God gave it to his son, Vaivarshata Manu. And Manu gave it to his son, Ikshaku. And Evam Parampara Praptam Imam Rajorshayo Vidu. In a line of saintly kings, in a disciplic succession of the saintly kings, this knowledge was flowing and they were actually establishing and this understanding and guiding their citizens in the proper path of prosperity and happiness. So that was Krishna's point. He just casually mentioned it. But then Arjun came up with a question. Arjun said, Vikashan was born so long ago, and you are born just the other day. Aparam, apara, pavato janma, param janma vipashyat. Katham etat vijaniyam, tamado praptavaniti. How can I believe? Not believe, he said vijaniyam. How can I understand? How can I understand that you gave this knowledge to vipashyat? See, all this while, in the Bhagavad Gita and before also, Arjun and Krishna, they were cousins. Their relationships were that of cousins. And Arjun and Krishna were of the same age, therefore they had a very intimate, friendly relationship. Just as among the cousins, the cousins of the same age, become close to each other, very intimate to each other. So that was Arjun's relationship with Krishna. He was his cousin. But now his cousin is saying that I give this knowledge to Vivashvan. So now he is curious. How can he speak like that? Like, then Krishna actually makes the point. That, look Arjun, bohuni me vyatitani janmani tava charjuna. Many, many times both you and I have taken birth. Tani aham veda sarvani, but I know all of them. Nattham vetta parantapa. But Arjun, you do not remember them. So in this way, Krishna is now establishing the difference between him and Arjun. The difference between a living entity and the Supreme Personality of God. A living entity is also eternal. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is also eternal. But the difference is the Supreme Personality of Godhead knows everything, whereas a living entity forgets. As soon as he dies, he forgets. Then he begins with a new body. And that is, in that body he continues another chapter. Begins another chapter. Then in this way, life after life in different bodies, he goes through different experiences. And he forgets about his previous life. Whereas Krishna is telling that, Tani aham beda sarvani. Sarvani means all. Of them, of those lives that I have been, I remember everything. Then Krishna is saying, that actually, Arjun, I don't need to take birth. You need to take birth. You have to go from one body to another through the cycle of birth and death. But that's not the case with me. Ajo opishan abhayatma, bhutanam ishvaro opishan, prakritin shamadhishthaya, sambhavami atmamaya. Sambhavami atmamaya. I manifest, I appear. I am actually unborn. In order to come here, I don't have to take birth. Sometimes I take birth. especially when I perform my pastime as a human being, in the human life form, then I take birth, like Ramchandra, Krishna Chandra, Chaitanya Chandra. I take birth. But there are many other incarnations where I don't take birth, don't need to take birth. Like Matsya, Kurma. Matsavata didn't take birth from another fish. Meena just appeared to King Satyavrata. As Varahadev, he appeared from the nostril of Brahma. As Kurma, he just appeared from nowhere. There was a need. Now the milk ocean has to be churned. They got Mandar Mountain to churn the milk ocean. But when they brought that Mandar Mountain, it sank in the milk ocean. So both the demigods and demons are completely baffled. Now what to do? So Krishna said, don't worry, I'll make arrangements. So he appeared as tortoise. And he supported that mountain on his back. So in this way, Krishna can appear in any way. He can appear from nowhere. He can also appear from somewhere. He can also appear from a pillar, as Rishikadev did. So that is how wonderful Krishna's activities are. So Ajo-opi, although I am unborn, but still, Bhutanam Ishwaro-prasan, Prakritin Sham Adhishthaya, taking advantage or taking shelter of my internal potency, I appear. I manifest myself. Sambhavami Atmamaya. And why do I come? Yada yada hi dharmasya plani bhavati bharata. So in this way, Krishna is now establishing his identity as the Supreme Personality of God. And the fourth chapter, Krishna's identity has been established as the Supreme Personality of God. And then Krishna advised Arjuna how and why to surrender unto him. And then, in the fifth chapter, Krishna actually goes into another aspect of sacrifice. Prior to that, in the third chapter, Krishna spoke about yajna or sacrifice. And he said that, offer it to the demigods. But then he pointed out that the demigods are actually granting you all these facilities because of me. I have given them the authority. It's my arrangement. Therefore, there's no need to go through the demigods. You can come directly to me. So in this way, in the fifth chapter, Krishna very eloquently reminded us that the real sacrifice is to offer everything to Krishna. That is the ultimate purpose of our sacrifice. Thank you very much, and we'll give a little break now. Now, just before I give the break, does anybody have any question pertaining to this discussion? Okay, so yeah, Jagannath.
Thanks. two things. One is the living entity is superior energy. So how come the superior energy is weaker than the inferior energy?
Yeah, very good point. Very good point. The living entities are from the superior energy and material nature is inferior. Then how come the superior energy, the living entities, come under the control of the material nature? Very good point. The living entities are not superior energy as such. They are from the superior. But they are minute. Whereas material nature, although it is inferior by nature or characteristic, but it is Krishna's own potency. Daivi hesha gunamai mama maya durattaya. So, you see, living entities are therefore, living entities therefore have been classified as marginal. There are two energies, inferior energy, superior energy, external energy, internal energy. And in between, there is the marginal potency, the living entities. The living entities are from the marginal energy. So they have, marginal means they have the option open to them. Whether they want to go to the inferior nature or whether they want to go to the superior nature. If they want to, if they surrender to Krishna, then they will be in the superior nature. If they reject Krishna, they will be in the inferior nature. The simple option open to them.
Okay. That's great, thank you. One technical question?
Yeah, sure.
In terms of the disciplic lines, this new disciplic parampara, right, is a part of the same one that started with Krishna and Vivashwan, right? Does this, where does it fit in to like the list given in the book from Krishna to Lord Brahma,
yeah,
etc.? Is it in there, just,
yeah,
or is it a separate
list? This disciplic succession is Krishna is saying that I'm opening him, I mean start re-establishing the knowledge because it has been lost through you, because you are my friend and you are mine. And the disciplic succession that has been given there is the Gauriya Vaishnava line. Brahma Matva Gauriya line. In that line, Arjun also is not there.
Right?
Yeah. So that is a very special line. And that line is not exactly the line of Bhagavad Gita. That is the Bhagavad Parampara. Line of Srimad Bhagavatam. The understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You see, that's why Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study. It is not leading you. I mean, it is not taking you to the ultimate point. It is leading you towards that direction. But Srimad Bhagavatam is what is leading you to the main point.
Thank you.
Yes?
Sorry, Maharaj, I had one question from the summary. So Maharaj, in the second chapter it said, the second chapter is known as Gita Sutra, because in this chapter karma and jnana have been described clearly but not bhakti. So Maharaj just wanted to understand that point.
Yeah. Initially, Krishna is taking us step by step into that point. Karma and jnana has been discussed, but bhakti has been, it's a very special line. Indication has been given. Say for example, when Krishna is saying that I am re-establishing the knowledge through you, because bhaktosime sakha cheti. Right? So he made indication of that is there. But the elaborate and extensive discussion didn't take place. Krishna is reserving it from 7th to 12th chapter. First 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita are dealing with karma. Second 6 chapters are dealing with bhakti. And third 6 chapters are dealing with jnana. Now one may say, well, that means karma and then bhakti and then ultimately jnana. No, that is not the real understanding. The real understanding is, when you have something very valuable, where do you keep it? Do you keep it outside or keep it in the middle? Keep it protected. So that's what Krishna. The second 6 chapters, middle 6 chapters, are the most important part of our life. And we'll discuss that. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Yes? Yeah.
Maharaj, you pointed out a very important point, that we have to surrender to Krishna. But then, can you elaborate, because also in the 4th chapter, there is Tadvidhi Prani Patena, that you have to actually also approach a spiritual master. And work under him submissively to understand these signs. Because Krishna will just not give these signs.
Yes.
If you can elaborate, of course I know that the Guru is the bridge.
Right.
But because we are mostly devotees here, the importance of this important verse, especially when it comes to rendering service submissively, and then how that links with Krishna.
Yeah, very good. Very good point. You see, although Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and He gave the knowledge, but we cannot really converse with Krishna. Like, knowledge is based on question answers. Like, when you don't understand, what do? You have to ask. You have to present that, well, can you please explain? This is what I can understand. Now, we can't do that with Krishna. Therefore, Krishna's representatives are there, who we can ask and who can explain to us. And that representative of Krishna is the spiritual master. So we need a spiritual master to ask questions, to who can dispel our doubts. But his qualification is that he simply repeats what Krishna has said. He doesn't concoct anything new. And that's why he's bona fide representative of Krishna. Like, for example, you can take a book, but can you master the subject just by reading the book yourself? It's practically impossible. Say, for example, if you want to become a doctor, there are so many books on that science. But just by studying those books, can you become a doctor? No. But you go to the faculty in the university, medical science, and you study under the guidance of the teachers. And after 3, 4 years, 5 years, you become a qualified doctor. Because you have understood the subject, what is presented in the books has been simplified by these people, the teachers. And that's how you have mastered the subject. Similarly, the spiritual knowledge also must be received through the guidance of a bona fide teacher. And those bona fide teachers are the spiritual masters. And their qualification is that they represent Krishna. They present the way the knowledge has been given by Krishna. And they have received the knowledge as it has been presented by Krishna because they have received it from a person who has mastered the subject themselves. Right? Thank you, Balaram. Hare Krishna. Balaram, right? Your name is Balaram or Baladev? Baladev. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande. So, okay, we ran. So we'll meet at 20 past.